All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Thursday, everybody. Today is May 21st, 2026. NVIDIA earnings blew away expectations, as expected. And, well, nobody cares. Yep, that sound you hear is nobody giving a shit that NVIDIA beat and raised again. Look, the numbers were spectacular. It was a nearly perfect quarter from NVIDIA. $81.6 billion in revenue, up versus 79.2 expected. Big beat. Massive growth year over year. Earnings per share, $1.87 versus $1.77 expected. Data center revenue was $75.2 billion of that $81.6. All right, so $75.2 over $81.6. 92.1% of NVIDIA's revenue is now coming from data centers. All right, nice diversified business you got there, but I digress. Why? Why does the market not care? All right, to understand why the market doesn't care will require you to don the tinfoil hat. All right, I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why the market doesn't care about this. First of all, accounts receivable, $40.7 billion. Not big growth in accounts receivable. We've seen that in past quarters. We didn't have the big growth there. So it's not so much the growth that I want to talk about. But a guy that I follow on Twitter, Ed Zitron, he runs a Substack called Where's Your Ed At? Really good podcast. Ed has been talking about in recent months that he thinks NVIDIA has a million GPUs that they have already sold, but because the data centers can't get hooked up to the grid, NVIDIA is just basically storing them. They've already booked the revenue and they're just sitting there. And well, look, the average price of a GPU that NVIDIA sells is somewhere around $35,000, $40,000. And they've got $40 billion in accounts receivable, GPUs that they've sold that they haven't been paid for. Well, as a matter of fact, a million times 40,000 would give you $40 billion in accounts receivable. So I think Ed Zitron's probably onto something, that they've already booked sales of a million GPUs that are just sitting there collecting dust and depreciating because nobody can find any power. That's one reason why maybe nobody cares about NVIDIA's earnings beat. Another reason they probably don't care is half of that revenue was NVIDIA's own money doing an effing circle. In other words, the same thing I've been talking about since 2023. Marketable securities were up $18 billion, including the $2 billion that they bought in CoreWeave stock, but they also bought Nebius and Iron and all these other ones. They are literally paying their customers to buy their product. In other words, they're buying the product from themselves. Non-marketable securities, which would be like private companies, up $21 billion. All right, anchoring that, of course, was that massive investment they promised to make in OpenAI. All told, you've got nearly $40 billion of round-tripped investments that NVIDIA made in the last quarter. And lo and behold, their revenue grows by almost $40 billion. A shocking coincidence, I'm sure. It has nothing to do with NVIDIA just financially engineering this whole freaking multi-trillion dollar bubble, which, in my opinion, largest accounting fraud in human history. And again, the market doesn't care. Stock plus or minus 2% since that came out. It's been down most of the time. Who knows what it's going to do by the end of the day. Now, as that is going on, we've got this other big story. SpaceX has finally filed for their IPO. And well, there's some interesting things in this filing. Look, a lot of people are excited for the SpaceX IPO because SpaceX does amazing things with technology. Their spaceships, all right, like they're kidding me. Let me just say, I mean, I got a wall full of Star Wars books over here. I got Darth hanging out in the back. Their Starship is freaking cool. It is awesome. It's the size of a skyscraper and it lands standing up. It's cool. The technology is amazing. That being said, that is not what is about to IPO. SpaceX is an AI company with a rocket ship attached. All right, they're seeking a $1.75 to $2 trillion valuation, which I'm pretty sure would make them even the biggest IPO in history, bigger than Saudi Aramco. And they're talking about a 28.5 total addressable market. All right, the market potential for SpaceX is like, what's that, like 95% of American GDP? Okay, so SpaceX is going to control everything. Almost all of that total addressable market is artificial intelligence. Almost all of it. There's like a $300 billion TAM for their space rocket business. There's like maybe $1 trillion total addressable market for Starlink and their internet business. Everything else is AI. So look, if you want to buy SpaceX because you think their ships are cool, I get it. Do the math though, guys. You're not buying a spaceship company. You're buying an AI company that does spaceships on the side. And well, you know my opinion of AI companies in general. Also going on, Samsung this morning. Big news out of Samsung. They secured a last-minute deal. It hasn't been approved by the union yet, but it probably will be. A last-minute deal to avoid the strike. The average worker bonus at Samsung is going to be, at least they're proposing, $340,000. Which, by the way, a lot smaller than what the union was asking for. But if you go to a blue-collar guy and be like, we're offering you $340,000 in bonus on your, you know, what, $80,000, $90,000 salary. Yeah, he's probably going to take it. I'm guessing that's going to be approved here. Now, here's the rub. It's mostly stock. All right. They wanted money. They're getting stock. I don't know what that means for Samsung shares. A lot of these guys are probably going to immediately sell that stock because they know it's in a bubble. But regardless, the KOSPI index ripped on that news, 8.4% higher for South Korean stocks. I guess a couple of South Korean grandmas sold their insurance policies and bought Samsung stock on that news. The KOSPI index has now had 9.5% plus moves in a single day just since the start of this year. 9 days this year, the entire index has risen 5% or more. Yeah, it's a bubble. It's a bubble, very much. We got John Deere earnings this morning. And, you know, this John Deere earnings beautifully captures the state of the American economy, I think. You've got farmers can't afford farm equipment because of the Chinese not buying soybeans, because of depressed commodity prices, and now astronomically high fertilizer prices. Farmers are in trouble, and they're not buying tractors and combines. All right. And you'd think a company like John Deere, that would be a big problem. Because tractors and combines kind of their thing. But no, John Deere is an AI company now. You didn't know that? You didn't get that memo? Yeah. John Deere is an AI company now. Sales in their construction and forestry division more than offsetting the decline in ag sales because we're building so many freaking data centers across the country. So John Deere, as far as the stock goes, it doesn't care that farmers can't afford tractors because AI. Meanwhile, we've got the government talking about the AI bubble. The government is already working on the next bubble this morning. The federal government is going to be subsidizing quantum computing companies by $2 billion in grants and taking equity stakes in 9 quantum computing firms. So yeah, the one bubble hasn't even popped yet. We're already working on the next one. That's fun. Gotta pump those asset valuations, even though stocks are at all-time highs and inflation is rising and people can't afford gasoline. But no, by all means, spend billions of dollars on Silicon Valley science projects, please. Walmart earnings were actually pretty solid. We got 4.1% growth in comps for Walmart. You know, I was throwing a lot of shade at Target yesterday. I was very skeptical of the 5.6% comps that Target reported, especially because it was the first quarter of their new CEO. And when I see the performance indicators suddenly look all shiny and clean just after the new guy takes over, it makes me think they're juking the stats. But I got to be honest, Walmart's numbers coming in at 4.1%, pretty close, very similar results, not as good as Target's, but maybe that makes Target's results a little bit more credible. Microsoft and Ernst & Young are teaming up. They're going to spend $1 billion to help companies adopt AI. And I've seen so many headlines like this. Why do they have to say this? Oh, we're teaming up to help companies adopt, to help with the transition, to we're deploying forward engineers to expedite the learning curve for portfolio companies. No, these are sales moves. They're deploying a sales team. They're spending $1 billion to market their AI because Microsoft spent all the money in the world on freaking Copilot and nobody wants it. Almost nobody uses it. That's why they're spending all this money. It's a sales gimmick because they're trying to force it. Because people who try AI are like, it's neat, but I'm not going to pay that much for it. It's losing money. It's having no measurable impact on productivity, even though these boardroom schmucks keep laying off half their companies because they read a thing in Kiplinger's about AI, and they think it makes them sound forward-looking in front of the other executives to say, let's fire 1,000 people and replace them with chatbots. Then the chatbot deletes the entire company database, and they're like, oh, shit, let's spend a whole bunch of money to hire back the same people to come in and clean up the mess that the AI made. Okay, deep breaths. I got to remember to breathe in the middle of these tirades. So that's going on. AllianceBernstein, another one, is teaming up with Brookfield and Carlyle to dump their bags into your 401k, something I've been warning about for years now. These guys are sitting on toxic assets that they can't sell. President Trump cleared the way to make these assets available in 401ks and pension plans. And so, yeah, they're looking at your retirement with a twinkle in their eye. And as further warning along that, we have this story about life insurance and private equity, and this one woman in particular. We're going to wrap up the show with that one. Guys, be careful out there. They are going after your retirements with all of this illiquid garbage that we talked about just yesterday, how Canadian pensions were trying to sell private equity stakes, and the bids they were getting were like 50% of the advertised value because this stuff is not worth what they claim it is. And before they see price discovery, they're trying to dump all that crap into your life insurance and your pension plan, your IRA and your 401k. We can see it coming. We've been talking about it for years. We're going to continue talking about it because people need to know that this is happening. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every day. The S&P 500 is currently negative this morning, down by about 28 basis points or 0.37% in the red. We have got the Dow is also down 130 points, 140 points now, 0.28%. A lot of this coming around 6 a.m. I'm not really sure what happened at 6 a.m., why we got this big drop in the Dow. Maybe that was Deer earnings. I'm not really sure what that was. Deer was negative. But yeah, NVIDIA is the big news this morning. And the big news is that there's no news. That was the NVIDIA takeaway. And the NASDAQ is also in the red, down about 170 points, 0.58% in the red this morning. Meanwhile, the dollar is a little bit stronger, 99.39, 25 basis points in the green. We've got a stronger dollar, higher interest rates, and higher oil prices again this morning. The three are correlated here. We did have some jawboning yesterday. We also got some pretty nasty oil inventory news. We'll get to that in just a minute. That could possibly explain the stronger dollar this morning. And watch out for the bond market, guys. We've got yields are higher again this morning. They were deeply red yesterday because there was some jawboning about peace in our time, as there always is. And well, right now, yields are higher. The 30-year Treasury, 5.14, higher by 2.5 basis points. The 10-year, still above 4.6. At 4.624, higher by almost 5 basis points. We dipped to 4.57 overnight, but now we are back higher here. The two-year yield, 4.106, higher by almost 7 basis points. And the one-month is up by a half a point at 3.608. I want to send a shout-out to Robert, the infrastructure guy, apparently, InfraA on Twitter, who posted this one saying, just so everyone understands how crazy this is, the last time SOFR, the secured overnight financing rate, was this far below the Fed funds rate, the system was so awash with dollar liquidity that the reverse repo had $2.4 trillion balance in it. They really printed. And then Robert is showing us this picture. All right, in red was the reverse repo. That was all that extra cash that was printed by the Fed, so much that they had to create a new bucket to put the money into. Then that got up to about $2.4 trillion, and then it came back down. Now it's currently near zero. Now, SOFR is the secured overnight funding rate. That's basically the cost of banks lending money back and forth to each other overnight. And then, of course, the Fed funds rate, that's what's set by the target rate set by the Fed when they raise and lower rates 25 points. That's the Fed funds rate. What we're currently sitting at right now is SOFR, the cost of the banks lending to each other overnight, is 11 basis points or 0.11% below the Fed funds rate. And typically, it bounces around pretty much exactly the Fed funds rate, right? It'll go up or it'll go down a little bit. But we're currently 11 basis points below the Fed funds rate. And the last time we were here, the market, like this guy is saying, was so awash with cash, there was $2.4 trillion in excess liquidity flooding the system. Now, I'm not sure this is really an apples to apples comparison. Like, I think reverse repo is just an example he's using to show how much extra cash there was the last time we saw SOFR this far below the Fed funds rate. Because I've been looking at this rip and move in stocks since the middle of March and scratching my head saying, what the hell is it? What is driving it? Is it just the circular accounting and AI? Is that really why stocks have been marching up in a straight line for a month and a half, not last week or so, notwithstanding? Or has there been some kind of stealth liquidity pump going on behind the scenes that we haven't been able to see? And well, since the beginning, pretty much since early December last year, you see where SOFR was actually above the Fed funds rate by quite a bit. That's when the Fed decided they were going to start the money printer again. They immediately stopped their QE and they immediately stopped their quantitative tightening and they began quantitative easing. They began printing $35 to $40 billion a month. And since then, we've seen SOFR actually dip below the Fed funds rate, well below the Fed funds rate. And coincidentally, over that same time period, we're looking at the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. This is a weekly snapshot. And look, here we are, right around the same time we saw that chart of SOFR minus Fed funds rate start to reverse lower. That was the beginning of December when we had about $6.5 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet. The Fed began QE again. And since then, we've added about $200 billion to the Fed's balance sheet, or somewhere around $35, $40 billion a month. So yeah, it's not really a stealth liquidity pump. They're doing it out in the open. But I guess I'm just sitting here in disbelief. How the hell can they justify doing this? With stocks at all-time highs, bubble proportions, Korea's off doing whatever the hell they're doing in Korean stocks, and yet inflation is rising rapidly as gas prices explode, and the Fed is printing money into this, which I guess in their defense is only like the third or fourth most insane thing that they've done this decade. But what the hell? How can you justify this? So I do think there is a liquidity pump that's going on behind the scenes that is largely responsible for driving this market bubble. All right. End of side note here. We've got Bitcoin is lower by a couple hundred bucks, essentially unchanged from yesterday, 77,193. We had a busy news day, guys, so I had to cut the story, but there was an article out yesterday that highlights how Michael Saylor and Strategy is basically made up the entirety of the Bitcoin market now. They are buying about 2 Bitcoin for every 1 Bitcoin that the miners produce, which means this whole pump here over the last couple of months, this has been driven by Stretch, Saylor's new infinite money glitch in its entirety. The thing about infinite money glitches, guys, they work until they don't. So just beware that if you're holding Bitcoin, you have a Saylor risk that you're sitting on, a significant one. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is down $42 this morning, $4,502. Oil up, yields up, gold down. We've been seeing this for quite a while here. Gold is really trading very heavily correlated with oil prices or inversely correlated to oil prices these days. And look, there's a lot of stories about Turkey this morning that I saw, like Turkey sold almost all of their U.S. treasuries and a whole big chunk of their gold over the last few weeks just to prop up their failing lira, because when oil prices rise, you know, these currencies and companies that are notoriously heavy on the money printer, their currencies start to fail. And so they start selling anything they can to support their currency, including dollars and including gold. And so, you know, you gold bugs out there, be careful. If you think oil prices are going sharply higher in the future, that probably means gold prices are going down. All right. Meanwhile, we've got spot silver is lower by a dollar or 1.33% in the red this morning, $74.84. See earlier discussion about gold and oil. Silver is no exception to that. Copper is lower by 1%. Platinum lower by 2.25%. Palladium lower by 4.25%. And crude oil is up this morning, 3.7% higher at $101.92. Take a look at that oil chart, still above the 50-day moving average. We got another bounce off of that. How many times have we bounced off the 50-day moving average in the last couple of days here? Yeah, there's one there. There's one there. We got two more here. 50-day line continues to hold here, $101.80. Now, this big red candle yesterday, really had me scratching my head. We were down about $5 in oil yesterday, and yet we had some really dreadful inventory data that came out yesterday. And the reason why oil was down because drawboning. Oh, we're really close to a peace deal, I swear, according to some unnamed guy. But then we also had this data. U.S. crude and gasoline inventories fell last week on strong demand, the EIA says. U.S. crude and gasoline stockpiles fell last week as demand remained elevated while distillate inventories were up. Distillate is like your diesel and your fuel oil. That's according to the Energy Information Administration on Wednesday. Crude inventories fell by 7.9 million barrels to 445 million barrels for the week ended May 15th. That's compared with analysts' expectations for a 2.9 million barrel draw. So we had almost triple the inventory decline that the market was expecting yesterday, and yet prices went down on this. That's how effective this ridiculous jawboning has been. Crude stocks at the Cushing, Oklahoma delivery hub fell by 1.6 million barrels for the week, while crude exports from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve fell by 9.9 million barrels, the most on record last week. 9.9 million they dumped from the SPR last week. It's another large weekly drop in U.S. oil inventories, this time driven by U.S. crude oil, which saw a massive drop of nearly 18 million barrels for commercial and strategic inventories, said Giovanni Stanova. Net U.S. crude imports rose last week by 3,000 barrels per day, and exports climbed by 112,000 barrels per day to 5.6 million barrels. U.S. crude exports have been robust as demand from other countries rise to fill supply gaps caused by the war with Iran. So that last paragraph sums it up here. We are exporting a lot more energy to try to make up from the shortfall from the Middle East. That is coming at the expense of our inventories and our SPR, which is seeing significant drawdowns. But that's not the only thing the world is doing to adapt to the oil shortage. We've got Javier Blas here talking about what's going on in China. This one on X this morning. China continues to cushion the global oil market with imports May to date plunging significantly below even the depressed levels that were seen in April. At the current pace, Chinese crude oil imports are set to hit a 10-year low in May. On a four-week average, Chinese crude and condensate imports are running about 4 million barrels per day below pre-war levels. So how is the world dealing with this energy crisis? A couple of ways. Number one, using less. It's getting more expensive to drive, more expensive to fly. Poor people are doing those things less. You've also got the U.S. is exporting a ton of oil, and the Chinese are importing much less than they used to. That is how the world is adapting to this shortage of energy. All right, but let's talk about the big one for the day. NVIDIA tops Q1 estimates and offers upbeat outlook on strong chip sales. Stop me if you've heard this one before. NVIDIA reported its fiscal first quarter results after the bell on Wednesday, topping analyst expectations on the top and bottom lines and offering a better than anticipated Q2 outlook. For the second quarter, NVIDIA said it anticipates revenue between $89.1 and $92.8 billion. The street was looking for $87.3, so it was a big raise there. For Q1, NVIDIA reported earnings per share of $1.87 on revenue of $81.62 billion, beating the $1.77 and $79.18 billion analysts had expected. The company also boosted its quarterly dividend from 1 cent to 25 cents a share. Nobody buys NVIDIA for the dividend, though. NVIDIA's data center business bought in the bulk of its revenue, topping out at $75.2 billion. Guys, look at that. $81.6 billion total revenue, $75.2 of it was data center. All right, all them eggs are in that same data center basket. All right, you just understand, there's no diversification, never heard of her. Wall Street analysts were projecting $73.47 billion, so that data center number was a bit beat. That's up from $39.1 billion they reported in the first quarter of last year. So almost a $40 billion increase in revenue. Where could it have come from? Spoiler alert, it was NVIDIA's own money. According to CFO Colette Kress, hyperscaler revenue accounted for 50% of data center sales in the quarter. The remaining 50% came from a variety of sources, including AI clouds like CoreWeave, which is just a special purpose vehicle for NVIDIA, industrial, enterprise, and sovereign customers. NVIDIA did not see any revenue from Hopper products into China occurred during the quarter, especially not when Supermicro is just smuggling the Blackwells into China and then reporting them as sales to Malaysia or Singapore. Of course, they saw zero China revenue. doesn't mean their chips aren't winding up in China. All right, but here's the important thing. Here's what I want to zoom in on you guys. All right, first of all, this is from their S, not their S1, their 10Q filing. All right, here's their revenue number, $81.61 billion, up from 44, all right, almost a $40 billion increase in their revenue year over year. All right, that's phenomenal growth. All right, let's not sell that short, but the numbers are impressive. But it's not real. That's my problem with it. It's not real. It's an accounting gimmick. And it's always been my problem with this whole bubble. Let's talk about why it's not real. First of all, accounts receivable net, $40.7 billion. All right, that's up from $38.4 billion. It's only up a little bit. We didn't see the huge growth in accounts receivable. That's not the thing. The point is $40.7 billion. That is exactly the amount of money that you would expect to be sitting in accounts receivable. In other words, revenue that they have reported but haven't actually been paid for. That's exactly the amount you would expect if Ed Zitron was right and that there was a million GPUs sitting in warehouses collecting dust while depreciating. And by the way, not Ed Zitron. Other people have been on that too. Ed Zitron has been talking about it lately. Kakashi talked about it a lot. Just Dario talked about this a lot. I've been talking about this a lot. There's a lot of these things just sitting there collecting dust. They can't hook them up to the grid, kind of like Microsoft CEO said last year, but they're still buying them because you got to keep that stock bubble going. $40.7 billion, that's about the value of a million GPUs sitting there doing nothing. How much longer is that going to keep up? But the other thing I want to talk about here is some of their securities. First of all, where is it? Marketable equity securities, this category here under their assets. Marketable equity securities are $30.2 billion, and that is up from $12.8 billion last quarter. All right, somewhere around $18 billion in marketable securities in stock that NVIDIA bought in just the last quarter. $2 billion of that we know came from CoreWeave at the last minute because CoreWeave couldn't pay their debt, and so NVIDIA bought $2 billion of their stock that CoreWeave had just issued. Meant proof. All of a sudden, CoreWeave has $2 billion to service their debt. It's amazing, and to continue buying NVIDIA's product. So $18 billion worth of marketable equity securities, stock that NVIDIA bought in their customers. And then look down here in non-marketable securities, which would be like shares of privately held companies. That's up by over $21 billion, $43.3 billion versus $22.2 billion last quarter. All right, so between the marketable and non-marketable securities, NVIDIA invested somewhere around $40 billion in their own customers just in the last 3 months, and magic, $40 billion of revenue growth. Isn't it amazing how that happens? And like magic, $40 billion of GPUs that they're reporting is sold that they haven't been paid for yet. And that's why this isn't real. That's why I've been banging on this drum for years. And that's why the market doesn't care right now. NVIDIA stock, despite the best quarter ever, down $1.86 or 0.81%, although still sitting at $221 a share with $5.4 trillion valuation for the biggest accounting fraud in history. And as always, full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA for reasons. All right, also going on this morning, the SpaceX IPO. This is a big one here. SpaceX IPO requires a leap of faith in AI, Mars, and Musk's vision. You can forget Mars. You can forget Musk's vision. This is an AI company, all right? You must understand if you're buying SpaceX, you're buying an AI company. That's where all of the valuation is being derived from. Elon Musk's SpaceX pulled back the curtain on a business empire that has racked up ballooning losses and debt after acquiring a cash-hungry startup and pumping billions of dollars into futuristic endeavors ranging from AI to a Mars rocket. The prospectus that SpaceX filed Wednesday for an IPO of unprecedented size boiled down to a well-worn strategy that entrepreneurs commonly hawk up and down Wall Street. In order to make money, we need to spend money, and nowhere are there outlays larger than in space and artificial intelligence. The big takeaway for me is that SpaceX is now an AI company, said Chad Anderson, an early SpaceX investor and founder of Space Capital. Musk is seeking to pull off the unprecedented feat of achieving a $2 trillion valuation from the outset, an audacious plan that's set to transform both the public and private markets if it succeeds. At the same time, the prospectus lays bare concerns over whether private companies with limited financial disclosures are largely illiquid shares are reaching unjustified valuations in venture capital-led funding rounds. Investors aren't paying for today's business. They're paying for the platform that owns the next 50 years of orbital infrastructure, Anderson said. The company's future projections, even when championed by a celebrity figure like Musk, are nothing short of extreme. SpaceX states that their total addressable market, or maximum revenue ceiling, is $28.5 trillion, which is like almost all of U.S. GDP, by far the largest in history, according to the filing. Nearly all of that would come from AI, with space making up just $370 billion and Starlink-based connectivity $1.6 trillion. Mike Alvey's founder and fund manager of VIDA Vision Fund, an early investor in SpaceX, said it's a shocker how aggressively the company is pitching its AI capabilities. For a rocket company, that's wild, Alvis said, because it's not a rocket company. All right, they've got a 28.5 total addressable market, and 27 trillion of that is AI. Then again, buried in a filing of over hundreds of pages were glimmers of financial promise. The company reported $18.7 billion in 2025 revenue, up by about a third in each of the last 2 years. At that pace, SpaceX will be a $24.2 billion company by the end of the year. $24.2 billion in revenue, and somehow you get to a $2 trillion valuation. Yeah, leap of faith is putting it lightly. And again, guys, this isn't to downplay the technology. I watch SpaceX rocket launches all the time because I'm amazed at what they're able to accomplish. But awesome technology and awesome companies and legitimate accounting and tight books are two totally different things. And SpaceX, as awesome as the technology is, the books are just as sloppy. Meanwhile, Samsung chip workers to get an average of $340,000 bonus in the AI boom. Looks like they have avoided the strike. Samsung Electronics will distribute about 40 trillion won or $26.6 billion to chip employees as a bonus for this year after the company struck a last-minute deal with labor unions to avert a strike. Samsung employs 78,000 people in its semiconductor division. While bonus levels will vary, workers stand to get 513 million won on average. That's equivalent to about $340,000, according to Bloomberg calculations, based on the proposed terms and estimates for 2026 operating profit. Samsung employees earned 158 million won on an average in 2025, according to the estimate. So, you know, you're looking at five times the annual bonus, about four times the bonus they got last year. Under the tentative deal, which still requires approval by union members, Samsung agreed to distribute 10.5% of its profit as a bonus in stock and a further 1.5% in cash. So we're looking at 12%. The union was asking for 15. They're offering 12, but it's mostly stock. That, I don't know if that's going to be a deal breaker for these guys. Probably not. The new bonus program will continue every year for 10 years as long as certain profit targets are met. Analysts estimate Samsung's 2026 operating profit will grow sevenfold to about 333 trillion won. And this news was enough to send Korean stocks even further into orbit. Korea's Kospi closes up 8.42%. This one from Zero Hedge on Twitter. That's the fourth biggest one-day jump on record. And look at this. The index has had 9 5% plus moves just in 2026, and it's only the middle of May. Nine times this year, the whole freaking index has jumped by 5% or more. Tell me it's a bubble without telling me. Meanwhile, John Deere gets a lift from construction, red data centers, as farmers still struggle. Deere & Co. is getting a boost from its construction and forestry segments, helping to offset volatile agriculture markets that continue to crimp farmer spending. The world's biggest farm machinery maker, which is now an AI company, apparently posted fiscal second quarter earnings that topped expectations, though it kept its profit outlook unchanged after raising it earlier this year. Shares were down 3.1%. Let's see. Deere, with its iconic green and yellow tractors, is considered a bellwether of the American economy. While net sales in its top segment of production and precision ag fell 14% in the second quarter, sales in construction and forestry rose 29%. Small agriculture and turf climbed 16%. The boom in AI has created more demand for construction machinery, bolstering companies such as Caterpillar. Deere pointed to higher shipment volumes and prices in its construction and forestry segment. Shipment volumes declined in production agriculture, while higher production costs also pressured profit in the farming segment. So farmers can't afford John Deere tractors, and John Deere doesn't care because AI. And, well, the stock doesn't really like this news, though. It's down 3.68%, off by 21 bucks this morning, trading at $536. Although year-to-date, this one is still up 20%, again, because of that AI story, and it's roughly flat over the last year. Meanwhile, we got the government is already hard at work blowing into the next tech bubble, U.S. to award quantum computing firms $2 billion and take equity stakes. The Trump administration hopes to spur a new era of American innovation, and I would be just shocked to learn in, say, subsequent financial disclosures that President Trump and his sons bought quantum computing stocks shortly before this announcement, but I digress. The Trump administration is awarding $2 billion in grants to 9 quantum computing companies in deals that include U.S. government equity stakes, the Commerce Department said. The move accelerates the administration's plans to boost the nascent industry, which has attracted a wave of investment from investors and businesses in recent months. The department has agreed to give $1 billion of the package to IBM, a leader in the race to build computers that use quantum mechanics to solve problems much faster than traditional supercomputers. Coupled with advances in AI, quantum computing has the potential to turbocharge scientific research, making it an economic and national security priority for President Trump. IBM and other companies are working to develop specialized chips for quantum computing, a focus for the government in its bid to spur domestic supply chains. IBM said it's investing $1 billion of its own cash alongside the award to set up what it says is the nation's first specialized quantum chip manufacturing facility. The company is establishing a new business focused on the effort. Chipmaker Global Foundries is receiving $375 million in funding. The rest of the firms are expected to receive $100 million, except for startup Dirac, which is slated to get $38 million. A slew of companies pursuing various approaches to quantum are slated to be awarded the funds, including publicly traded firms D-Wave Quantum, Rigetti Computing, and Inflection. The deals still need to be completed. All right, quantum computing, the next shiny new thing, and we're still not done with the current shiny new thing, AI. That's fun. Meanwhile, Walmart posts steady sales gain while flagging fuel costs. Walmart powered through another quarter of solid sales growth, flexing its scale to draw value-seeking shoppers and defy growing angst about economic instability. The world's largest retailer said comparable sales in U.S. stores rose 4.1%, excluding fuel, in the latest quarter, slightly better than what Wall Street was expecting. Walmart also forecasts adjusted profit for the second quarter that missed analysts' expectations. This is coming after yesterday's number from Target. That was 5.6% comps, so two good ones in a row. The results show that the company continues to gain market share across income levels with its focus on low prices, fast delivery, and wide assortment. The upbeat report is also likely to alleviate some anxiety that consumer spending will weaken amid rising inflation and a lackluster job market. The headline consumer is still reasonably healthy, Chief Financial Officer John David Rainey said in an interview with Bloomberg. The high-income consumer is spending with confidence in many categories, whereas the low-income consumer, we can tell, is more budget-conscious, trying to navigate certain financial distress. And I would add the fact that Walmart is talking about the high income consumer, that we're even mentioning the higher income consumer in a Walmart context, that is a data point unto itself, as people have been forced down the quality ladder and reluctantly become Walmart shoppers. But Walmart stock not looking so good. There was some comments from the CEO on the conference call that said if gas prices stay elevated, that they will be forced to raise prices. And it looks like the stock started accelerating downward after he said that. Walmart is currently down 6%, $122.94, mirroring the move in Target yesterday, I would add. Meanwhile, Microsoft and Ernst & Young to spend $1 billion to help clients adopt AI. Why won't they just say sales? It's amazing how all these articles about this topic, they're like, we're deploying forward engineers. We're hiring contractors to explain the benefits. They won't say that they're desperate to sell this stuff because nobody wants to buy it. Why won't Bloomberg put that in the title? Because that's what this is. This is a sales maneuver. They're spending $1 billion to help clients adopt AI. Technology giant Microsoft and consulting firm EY are partnering to spend more than $1 billion to encourage their clients to launch major artificial intelligence projects. The initiative is designed to help companies grow AI projects from the pilot stages into large-scale efforts, EY Global Vice Chair of Consulting Errol Gardner said in an interview. That's when clients can really receive a return on investment. That's right, because 95% of pilots in AI have shown no return on investments. But the problem is you got to bump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers, baby. Yeah, you spent all this money on your AI pilot and it lost money. But if you spend even more, that's when you'll get the return. And Microsoft and Ernst & Young are spending $1 billion to tell people this. Initially, the companies will focus on finance, tax, human resources, and supply chain work. According to an emailed statement, that'll be within the financial services, industrials, energy, consumer, and retail, government, and healthcare sectors. There's been a series of tie-ups between companies developing AI and consulting firms in recent months as they push to encourage clients to adopt such technology at scale. Again, encourage clients to adopt technology at scale. These are sales pushes. They're trying to drive sales because their crap isn't selling. Alphabet's Google launched a $750 million fund in April to help consultancy firms such as McKinsey & Co. and Deloitte deliver AI for their clients. KPMG and Anthropic said this month that the consulting firm would make its AI model Claude available for its staff, as well as embedding the technology across some of its own tools. Call it what it is, guys. This is sales. Meanwhile, AllianceBernstein teams with Brookfield and Carlyle on 401k push. Bag holders wanted. AllianceBernstein is teaming up with Brookfield Asset Management and Carlyle Group to offer private market investments to everyday retirement savers. Coincidentally, AllianceBernstein, Brookfield, and Carlyle have a whole bunch of bags that they need to sell. I'm sure that has nothing to do with the fact that they're excited to bring you this opportunity to buy the crap that they can't sell at the prices they're advertising. The firms will collaborate on a single standalone product that will invest in private equity, private credit, and real assets for 401k and other workplace-defined contribution plans, according to a joint statement on Wednesday. That's right, guys. You've got private equity, which is taking 50% haircuts in Canadian pensions, private credit, which is telling investors they can't have their money back, and commercial real estate, which has been avoiding price discovery like the plague. We're excited to bring you all of these wonderful opportunities to park this crap in your nest egg. The product, called ABC, as in all bags consolidated, perhaps, is designed to be implemented alongside existing target date funds or managed accounts. An investor's exposure to the underlying asset classes will be adjusted depending on when they're expecting to retire, according to the statement. Yep, beware, guys. They've been doing this all year. They are putting the pieces in place to dump all this toxic sludge into your retirement account. And here is a perfect example of this. This article in NBC. She paid an insurance company $99,000 to generate retirement income for life, and then it collapsed. Risks are mounting in the life insurance industry, and experts are concerned state regulators aren't protecting policyholders. That's because they're not. What's happening in life insurance is mind-boggling. It is wholesale theft, and it's happening in broad daylight. When Annie Benjamin invested $99,000 in an annuity 10 years ago, she trusted the insurance company to provide her with retirement income. She also relied on the company's regulator to ensure the insurer could meet its obligations. Benjamin's trust in both was misplaced. PHL Variable Insurance Company, a private equity-owned life insurer, collapsed in 2024 and is heading for liquidation. Benjamin's account is frozen, and 100,000 other PHL policyholders face a $2.2 billion shortfall, public documents show. What you thought you could depend on, you no longer have, said Benjamin, a retired 3M executive from Minnesota who has an autoimmune disease. I try not to get emotional about it, but mentally it has really impacted me because I am stuck. Basically, I'm stuck. And that is Miss Benjamin there, who was ripped off by this insurance company. They took her $100,000. They invested it in their own private equity assets, which weren't worth what they claimed they were worth. And now the company has failed. And this lady's losing her retirement because of it. With the decline of pensions, a rising number of Americans count on life insurance companies, promises to generate reliable retirement income, but it's no longer the staid, steady industry of the past. Aggressive companies affiliated with private equity firms and asset managers have been snapping up insurers and in some cases engaging in highly complex deals that can imperil policyholders. Such deals result in a bigger hole faced by PHL policyholders, documents show. What they're doing, private equity firms are buying insurance companies And then they're loading up the balance sheets of those insurance companies with the same assets those private equity firms are having trouble selling to anybody else. And the result of it was this PHL company went under, and this lady lost her retirement when that happened. Guys, that's why I'm warning about these 401k articles, about the pension article for the private equity holdings yesterday, and now about this one. All right, be careful. This stuff is rampant in Wall Street. This is the golden age of fraud. People's retirements are being looted in broad daylight while everybody celebrates their freaking tech stocks and this bubble that's going on. I can see this coming. This is not going to end well. Protect yourselves. Pull out those prospectus and those balance sheets. Understand what is your insurance company actually buying. And for the love of God, get the hell out of any insurance company that's owned by private equity. And with that happy note, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonhead supporters on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. You guys are awesome. There's links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.